All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Neil, how's it going this week? As I hear you did a good in a job interview.
I'm hoping so. Allegedly, I will know by Friday if I'm getting a provisional offer where I would need to pass a drug test, and they're doing a background check on me right now, I assume. But I don't
Oh, okay,
think
so
I.
never mind.
Yeah. So you
Yeah,
know, it's
crap.
all over. But you know, so when I don't get this job, I will be loading up my essentials. Just leaving Colorado, and I will be moving into Sam's Rat Cave.
There you go. Yep.
But
They're
no,
gonna be working.
yeah, I suppose. But you know, I hate to say it, I'm feeling a little optimistic. Maybe I'll have a job in the next week or so.
And what kind of
And then
position is this?
it's a customer support role. So basically, this company sells a certain product to a certain type of other company. And I would be the person that, after the sale has occurred, goes to the second company and shows them how to install and use that product.
Oh, okay. That would be cool. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so a lot of travel, which I think is kind of cool. But
Yeah.
they were also very direct with me in the interviews. Like two of the people had done it previously. Like, yeah, I burned out on the travel after about 3 years. Okay, good to know.
Yeah, honestly.
Other than that, I finished up my first graduate class on Sunday. Got my final grade back, 95%. Feeling pretty good about that. Although
Nice, nice.
I do think that the professor just kind of, I think she was phoning it in at least the last couple weeks, because the my final project, like, it wasn't dog shit, but I think structurally, like, I thought the assignment was messed up, and that made me not give it my 100% on it.
Yeah.
But I got a perfect grade. I was like, yeah, I would have graded myself lower, lady. But you know, feeling good that I passed that, so I'm a quarter done with that program. And other than that, been replaying Far Cry 3, still a top 10 game for me.
Love it.
Watched I'm halfway through the first season of Peacemaker, which is pretty good.
Okay.
And I watched the latest batch of Stranger Things episodes.
Nice.
Damn, no, you're having a good week.
Very nice.
Well, hoping things go good on Friday, and you've got a gainful employment in the immediate future. That would be cool. Is this like this isn't a tech company, is it?
It is a tech company.
Okay, because Meditech was similar. We had people that were like driving all over and flying all over just to like teach people how to. Yeah, that's a good position to like get your foot in the door in any given tech company. And then yeah, if you're getting that project manager certification, that could turn out good for you in the future. So, all right, well, I would say good luck, but like I said, in my experience, too much hope brings on divine retribution. So I would just say break a leg, and I hope things turn out terribly for you.
And I've got a little wooden back scratcher I'm gonna knock on real quick.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. And Gideon, how's it going this week, man? I know you just or you're knocking on heaven's door of finishing up Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah, I'm so close to being done. I finished up all the duels, which was driving me insane because I wish it's like, there's some that are like in the open world, but then they count ones that are like in the story. So I like beat the story again. And then there's ones that are attached to like side quests or like mythic quests. And it's just like I was able to just look up a list and like a guide, just go through it that way. But it's still like really tedious and annoying doing it that way. And I wish it was like almost like structured better with that. But now I just have to grind through the side quests, which should be pretty easy, and then so I'll be done with that. I also watched all of Stranger Things, or all four episodes that's out for the new season. And I am definitely not as high on it as some other people. I have quite a few gripes with it, but overall, I'm excited. I'm excited to see where it goes and have it finally be wrapped up. And then I watched a couple other movies besides the one we're going to talk about. I watched Home Alone for the first time.
Nice, nice.
I'm like, there's so many movies where I'm like, why didn't nobody ever show this to me? Or it's like a long time classic like this, and it's just like never seen it. Nobody ever showed it to me, you
I'm
know?
shocked that you made it through like analog TV just showing it around
Yeah.
Christmas time.
Yeah,
Like,
honestly. It's like we had what's the other one? A Christmas Story. We had that always like playing around Christmas time. But yeah, I don't know why this one wasn't. And I don't know how I didn't catch it on TV. You know, 'cause I was always watching TV as a kid. So watch that. That was fun to finally knock that
it
out.
might be a Muscatine thing because I've also never seen Home Alone in its entirety.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Okay.
And so to get into that, I've never seen A Christmas Story.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Oh, I love Christmas Story. Yeah.
I haven't seen it since I was a kid, so I kind of want to revisit it this year maybe just to see what I remember versus what I don't.
Tis the season.
Right? But lastly, the other thing I watched, I rewatched for the first time since it came out, the Dungeons and Dragons movie that came out in 2023. I'm not like a big Dungeons and Dragons guy, but I do like this movie quite a bit. I think it's a very fun adventure
No,
movie.
this is the one with Chris
That
Evans.
Chris Pine?
Chris
Chris
Pine.
Pine, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
I have considered bringing the like 1990s one with Jeremy Irons to the podcast because that movie is like horrible but also a lot of fun. The newer one, I was shocked as somebody who does enjoy D&D, I was shocked at how good it was. I was expecting
Oh
complete
yeah.
litter dog shit.
I
Like
agree.
going into that theater with some friends and like is it a masterpiece? No, but considering how that IP has been handled outside of
Right.
it was just like, oh my God, I'm enjoying myself? What's
Right.
happening? I don't know what this feeling is.
Especially, I feel like it punches above its weight and it's very like joyful and fun. It's like a really good feel good movie for me, like a newer favorite of that, and like it has a lot of cool practical effects, and I think Chris Pine is really enjoyable in it. And I it's like for someone like me, like I'm not totally against D&D, at least like with the actual playing it in person. That's like a game where like I need everything to be right. I need to have like the perfect friend group to play it and like a lot of free time and all this other stuff. But you know, I want to play like Baldur's Gate 3 and stuff like that. But yeah, I think the movie is so shockingly great, the new one. But yeah, I'd be down to watch the, was it from 2000, Neil, the original
Oh,
one, or
I forget exactly. It's like a, yeah, it's probably like a late 90s, early 2000s kind of thing.
okay.
Just like, just total dog shit. But
Yeah,
also,
2000.
like it's not worth bringing to the podcast. But it's definitely like a bro in 40s kind of thing where I'd love to do
Okay,
that.
yeah.
Well,
That'd be fun.
worth bringing to the podcast is quite the phrase because we did Tomorrowland.
Look, first off, don't put that evil on me and Gid. That was your pick.
I know, that's why I gave it a one, because I was thinking
It
about,
broke your heart.
well, spoiler alert. I was thinking about like, well, the only I was thinking about how I would have a really hard time giving any movie that I didn't bring a one, because I wouldn't want to hurt somebody's feelings and make them feel bad for wasting my time. Not that that has anything to do with what we're about to talk about, but
Oh
sorry.
boy.
Anyway, I'm sorry, I interrupted. What were you saying, guys?
I don't know.
Something about the D&D. Oh, and then I said we brought Tomorrowland. Yeah, Tomorrowland sucked. I was so disappointed. I wanted that to be so good, and it just wasn't.
Yeah. Unfortunate.
Well, yeah. Well, guys, let's see. What have I been up to? I finished Hollow Knight Silksong, the standard ending, not the secret ending. So I got to go back and do the secret stuff. Tell me if this is pure copium, but I think I have fairly good justification here. To get to the true ending, you have to do a bunch of stuff that the game doesn't explicitly tell you. And I didn't want to play the initial experience like with my phone out or with a laptop out and like looking up where to go and what to do. So like I was just content on getting the standard ending for my first playthrough. And then in the future, I will definitely go back once I'm done with Hades 2, because I'm right on the I'm playing Hades 2 and I'm right on the door of like actually finishing the like beating the end boss for the first time.
Nice.
And then once I finish Hades 2, I will have every Game of the Year candidate wrapped up in time for the Game Awards next week, and just in time to watch all of them be beaten by Expedition 33.
I don't think that's cope for a game like Silksong. What's the runtime on that?
15-20 hours.
Yeah. Like for a game like that, it's easy enough to do a second playthrough. But there are games like the Persona series or
Witcher 3,
the Owlcat games, where it's like I kind of want to just get the perfect ending the first time, and those are like 80 hour games.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for Silksong, I think you're totally justified.
Yeah, I just didn't want to, like, you know, like the eternal example is like the Persona games all have like true endings, or at least like Persona 4 does, and I think Persona 5 Royal does. I mean, and
yeah,
in its defense, the true ending of Persona 5 Royal would be extremely hard to miss, but Persona 4 is certainly not that way. Like, it would be really easy to miss that if you weren't paying attention. So I think in those cases, when there's like 80-100 hour RPGs, like, yeah, you should probably look this up so you don't have to replay it. But anyway, so I've just been clearing up a bunch of Game of the Year stuff. Went home for a visit, watched Zootopia with my family, which I thought was excellent. It was very funny, the first one. And then got back, started a new job on Monday, and then watched Stardust today.
Nice.
And here we are. So, Neil, do you want to talk a little bit about why you wanted to bring Stardust to the podcast and how you kind of heard about it and how you were introduced to it? Had you seen it before, etc.?
Well, so it's based on a novel by Neil Gaiman, which I have not read. I've got a copy of it somewhere, but I've never actually read it. I believe it came out in 2007.
Yep.
But I didn't watch it until like late high school or maybe even early college. So it's not like this isn't like, you know, the VHS that you had as a kid. But I remember watching it and like not having heard of it before, as at least in terms of the movie. I think I was like aware of the book existing because like Neil Gaiman is a pretty well-known author.
Mm-hmm.
But just like watching the movie, kind of the same way that we were talking about the new Dungeons and Dragons movie, just like being like shocked at like how much I actually enjoyed it based on something I'd never heard of as a film. And then you know, there are a couple of scenes that are in my, you know, YouTube playlist of things that I just go back to for, you know, a good little chuckle or what have you. And you know, we watched a couple of like darker Nick Cage movies, and I just thought, let's do a nice little palate cleanser. Let's revisit this in entire. Yeah, just you know, we'll get into this. I didn't bring this as like a ringer. But I just wanted to do something a little lighthearted and fun. You know, a nice popcorn movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm reminded of Mr. Plunkett saying, "It's the darkest of the trilogy. My stools are dark."
Actually, so we'll get into this. At the end, I actually started talking to myself and doing a Plunkett review of like the final scenes, because it does get into. I think it does get into that kind of why is she doing it this way? There's a clearly superior option.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into all that. Gideon, how about you? Had you heard of this, seen it before? How were you introduced to it? Did you know about the novel, et cetera?
Yeah, so I was introduced to this movie by Alyssa a couple of years ago. I don't know if it's exactly like a childhood favorite of hers, but her older sister showed it to her. So it's been in her life for a while. And this is maybe like my third time seeing it. But the other times I watched it, it was like, the first time I saw it, it was like on a DVD on a really tiny TV, like far away. So I didn't really get to fully appreciate it. And then the other time I watched it, I was like really sleepy, so I wasn't like paying the best attention. So this time I was like totally intent on, paying full attention, watching the whole time, and giving it my all, so to speak.
You were sitting
And
there
yeah.
like Clockwork Orange style with your eyelids taped
Not
open.
quite, but yeah. So I watched it this time, and I'd heard about, yeah, Neil Gaiman wrote the novel and everything. I think that came out in 99. And I won't spoil, but I did hear there's the book ending is like a lot more depressing than this ending. But I don't know like all the differences between the novel and the movie.
So for me personally, I had never heard of this. I don't know anybody who's heard of it, except Grace came in the room this morning, 5 minutes into the movie. She's like, "Are you watching Stardust?" And she was like ecstatic.
Yeah, so I just want to interject. Like, I part of me was like, me. This was me trying to set you guys up for like a date night in some way, because like, I think this movie has like the same kind of like vibe as like The Princess Bride. Like, you're
I
trying to get in
completely agree.
your, you're trying to get in your girlfriend's good graces. You put this on.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this is, well, that's kind of what Gideon was saying with Alyssa. Like, I feel like every millennial slash zoomer, like kind of in between, girl of a certain age probably saw this movie in middle school and was like really, really into it. And it kind of like a previous generation would have been really into The Princess Bride. And I do think there is a lot of overlap between The Princess Bride and this. The other movie it really reminded me of was The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, which I think speaks to a lightheartedness and a like an like a part of you, Neil, that like just wants to like sit back and say, like, okay, show me an interesting world, like show me a fantasy world that is interesting and I can kind of enjoy myself and shut off my brain for a couple hours. But no, I'd never seen it, never heard of it. I did not know it was a Neil Gaiman book until 10 minutes ago when you guys started talking about it. All I knew was that it had Robert De Niro in it, which we will certainly get into. And this movie is also like a complete cameo fest, which I thought was like one of the best parts of it. So this one's gonna blow. I don't know if you guys know this. Do you guys know who plays the dying king, like the old king?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's Peter O'Toole, Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah,
Yep.
it is Lawrence.
This is crazy.
I didn't know that until 10 minutes ago when I was like looking through the Wikipedia, and I was like, oh shit, yeah, that was Lawrence. It's hard to recognize him without like
Yeah. The blue
the
eyes.
what are they called? Yeah, like the Technicolor from that era just makes everybody's eye, like if you have blue eyes and Technicolor, they just like pop out of the screen. And yeah, anyway. So Neil, give us a little summary of the movie if you could. I know it there's a lot that happens. It goes on for a long time. So how about you give us a summary and then kind of give us your 10,000 foot impressions and why you, I am just, I can already kind of tell you like it, but I want to hear why.
Okay, so the general premise is you're in basically the Muscatine of 18th century England. Just like little backwater town. No, I'm sure Muscatine's nicer.
Well, you'd be sorely mistaken.
Yeah,
Third part,
you forget how much I hate England.
yeah. Oh, great.
But we follow. So we start with a slight prelude where a young man. So the town itself is called Wall, named for the nearby wall that apparently nobody ever crosses, because it's been guarded for the past 90 years by Grandpa Joe from
Yeah,
the.
literally. Old man
No,
Joe
no.
Joe.
No. It's the same actor who plays Grandpa Joe in the Tim Burton Willy
Oh
Wonka remake.
Oh, the version of Willy Wonka that I memory hold for my existence.
But if you cross over the wall, you actually enter like a alternate dimension where it's a little more medieval-esque, and there's magic. And this young man crosses the wall one night because he has a sense of adventure, and he is immediately hit on by a slave girl selling flowers, who, like, you know, they lock eyes and they're immediately banging in the back of her.
Who I did not really read initially as selling flowers. So, like, the flowers are not in the shot, and she's just like, "Are you interested?" And I was like, "Damn, she's just selling ass in this open air market." Like, times are tough in fantasy land. And then it like pans down to the flowers. I was like, "Oh, okay."
Well, but then it's also that they're not actually selling flowers because the witch who owns her is upset. It's weird. But you know, it's like, you know, charmingly fantasy, like, oh well, you know, that one costs you all of your memories before the age of three, and then the one she wants to sell him, this one costs you a kiss. And like, I was like, you know, they play this off as like a true love kind of thing, but it is fast. Like, I haven't seen a true love story that goes like that quickly. Like, this is faster than a bar hookup. Like, usually you need to buy the girl a drink, but she was just like, come with me, get in the back of the cart right now.
Yeah, well, people only lived to the age of 30 in fantasy and medieval times, so you had to get to things quick. You couldn't just be swiping for through your whole 20s, you know what I mean?
But so, you know, he goes back to his the regular world, and then 9 months later, the gate guardian brings him a basket with his newborn son, Tristan, who becomes our protagonist. And as he grows up, he falls in love with, like, the local hot girl, Victoria. But she's, you know, vapid and interested in the rich guy, Humphrey, who's played by a young Henry Cavill. She's stringing him along for favors. And, you know, he's just besotted with her. So one night, you know, when he's like making his own marriage proposal to her, essentially, they see a falling star, which is triggered from the other side of the wall, in a great scene where Peter O'Toole is trying to choose his successor to take over the kingdom of Stormhold. But apparently stars are people, but we don't know that yet. Young Tristan promises that to one up Humphrey, who's going all the way to Ipswich to buy Victoria a ring, he's going to go across the wall and bring her back the fallen star. And that'll be the sign of his love. But he has to bring it back to her within a week because that's her birthday, and that's when Humphrey's going to propose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good summation of the overall plot of a movie that kind of goes all over the place, and there's a lot more of like little things that happen in there, but we will definitely get to those. And so, what were your kind of 10,000-foot thoughts on the whole endeavor?
I think like the word that I just keep coming back to is that this movie's charming. We mentioned that it's kind of cameo rich, and it is, but at the same time, like, if you go through a lot of the actors and actresses, they're like staples in BBC miniseries, you know, the stuff that airs on like PBS on Saturdays that, you know, like my mom loves. And it, you know, it's like, it's this fun, like once you get into the Kingdom of Stormhold, it's just all these like fun little like magical rules that Tristan isn't familiar with because he's the Arfish out of water character, but you know, like they're explained relatively well, so you as the viewer understand them. There's witches, there's a freaking unicorn that's a reference to Blade Runner. You know, it's just fun. So honestly, like, one of the scenes that I have in my YouTube playlist of like fun things, and this is the Neil loves the bad guy characters. Is we talked about Peter O'Toole is the king of Stormhold, and he's dying, and he has to choose a successor from amongst his sons, who are all named in like Latin numerals. So it's Primus, Secundus, Tertius, so on and so forth. And he has seven sons, And in Stormhold, apparently, the way to become king is to kill all of your brothers. like that, it's not a secret. Like that's the way you're supposed to do it. But Peter O'Toole's dying, and he still has 4 sons left. So he endeavors to help his youngest son, Septimus, played by Mark Strong, murder Secundus by pushing him out a window. And I love that scene.
Dude, when Secundus entered, I was like, this dude is such a Chad. And then he got pushed out the window immediately, and I was disappointed.
Oh, I mean, I think it's a great like subversion of expectations. Like they mm-hmm. they play like this triumphant music. He's like a handsome looking guy. Mm-hmm. You know, him arriving last is like typically like a sign of importance. You know, it Rian Johnson, write this down. This is how you subvert expectations.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah. How about you? Oh no, go ahead.
Okay. But so to tie things together, the idea is that since there are still 3 brothers alive, the king sets out his magic king's amulet to fly off, and the son who returns with the amulet becomes king. The stone flies off into the sky and knocks Claire Danes' Yvaine, who is a star, out of the sky to Earth. So you know, it brings into this conjunction. So Tristan is looking for the star Yvaine. He doesn't know she's a person yet. She has the gemstone, which the princes are looking for. And then there's a third element where these witches can remain youthful and use their magic powers if they eat the heart of a star. So there's 3 vying parties all trying to get to Yvaine, who has the stone.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much a good summation as anything. Gideon, how about you? 10,000 foot thoughts and kind of impressions?
Yeah, I think, you know, this movie, it's very whimsical and, like Neil said, very charming and just kind of fun. I can totally get why there's like a really big following of people that just really adore and love this movie. And watching it this time, I really have a lot more appreciation for it and understand like why Alyssa loves it so much. I think, yeah, it has a really nice cast. I think the cameos are fun but also really well utilized. Even like smaller ones like Henry Cavill, I think he's fun every scene he's in. I love the Robert De Niro stuff. Honestly, that's like one of my favorite parts of the movie. Mark Strong as Septimus, I think, is a great like antagonist. And even the witches and like everything that they do, I think it makes for kind of that fun fantasy angle and just kind of not knowing what to expect or what's going to happen next. This movie just kind of, it makes me feel like it's like we don't get these kind of fantasy movies as much anymore. And maybe I'm just not seeing it, or it's just me getting older or whatever. I mean, this movie's like almost 20 years old at this point. But yeah, it has like a certain quality to it that I think is really endearing. And I think, you know, I think it looks really good production wise. I was enjoying the music, and just kind of some of the ideas, like how De Niro's like pirates, like, hunt and try and capture like lightning, almost like they're fishermen, but they're like pirates or something. Ricky Gervais's random cameo was like really funny too, and I enjoyed that quite a bit. Yeah, it has a good blend of like action, comedy, romance, and like fantastical whimsy. So I just have a greater appreciation watching it this time.
Mm-hmm. Were you not as hot on it the previous times?
Yeah, that's the thing. So obviously, like, first time I watched it, it was definitely not the best experience because it was like a DVD on like a 27-inch TV, like 15 feet away. And I have glasses, so it's like I can't see it the best already. And then the other time I was really sleepy, and it just like wasn't clicking with me also. Like, I didn't know what it was exactly, but it just like it wasn't doing it for me for whatever reason. But now I feel like now I'm more in the camp of like, okay, I could say I'm a fan of this movie and I'd enjoy revisiting it. Yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah, I would say I'm a little lower than you two on the movie overall. You know, it's hard to say, like, you know, any one performance isn't, you know, really good. It's just more like the subject matter isn't something I'm like hyper interested in. And I always feel like movies, well, you know, I thought for like the first 15, 20, 30 minutes, I was pretty involved with it, right? I was like really interested in this, like this dual world thing where we've got the normal world and the magic world. And I was following it all pretty well up until the girl fell out of the sky. And I was pretty interested in the story. And then once the girl fell out of the sky, it like, you know, in that moment, you see all the disparate elements of the movie and you kind of know like how things are going to come together. Like when she falls down and then they're chained together, I think most logical people are going to be like, okay, well, these two are going to end up together and he's going to end up falling for her and not this, you know, vapid blonde girl and that Henry Cavill is competing for him with, which I don't really think that that girl or Henry Cavill did anything wrong. I thought that was very funny at the end of the movie. Like we were sitting there at the end and they're like grumpy in the throne room. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't really know if these two did all that much wrong except for being beautiful and vapid. But anyway, I thought things were pretty predictable, right? Like once it's established that there's like a hunt for a king and, was there any doubt from the beginning of the movie that Charlie was, or not, I keep calling him Charlie because it's Charlie Cox, is the actor, but Charlie Cox was going to end up being king and end up with the Stardust girl. And like, is there any doubt that when Robert De Niro threw Charlie Cox off the airship that it was going to be a mannequin? We're like an hour and 30 minutes into the movie. I know we've got 40 minutes left. Did anybody think that like Charlie Cox was actually going to be dead? Did anybody think that Michelle Pfeiffer had a chance of winning in the end? You know, it's like these, I find it hard to be like invested and stressed out or like care about the stakes of them. And I know your response is going to be like, Sam, just enjoy yourself. It's a fantasy movie. Just like, why can't you just be normal and enjoy things? But like I don't know. I just have such a hard time getting invested in a movie where everything is like, I know how this is all going to go. I've seen this movie a million times. And I will also say that I think the problem with magic in movies like this is that it's too undefined in what it can and cannot do. So all sorts of magical bullshit is happening all the time. And after a while, you throw your hands up and you just kind of say, like, these people are seemingly capable of absolutely anything, and I don't know like who to be scared of, and I don't know like what the limits of the power is. Like for instance, at the very end of the movie, spoiler alert, when Septimus, is that the guy's name? So Septimus dies, and he gets sucked into the this like limbo world with all his brothers, who are all just chilling and watching like the final moments play out. And then it's revealed that Charlie Cox is actually the king. And then once it's revealed that he's actually the king, they all cease to exist. Like they all are just gone. But like Charlie Cox was the only existing heir to the throne before it was revealed that he was the only existing heir to the throne. You guys know what I mean? Like that, it was true as soon. I know you guys are going to be like, I'm thinking too hard about it, but this movie just makes up stupid bullshit rules all the time.
So I'm going to push back on you because the line that's said at the beginning by one of the ghosts is not until there's one person left, it's till a new king is selected. And so him picking up the stone and then so that one's explained.
Oh,
Now
okay. I was gonna say they talk about that, yeah.
I
Oh, okay.
I will say that Michelle Pfeiffer using her witchly powers ages her. So her like transforming this poor ginger guy into a goat, and then later into a busty bar wench, causes her like skin to model and
very
all kinds
disturbing.
Of stuff. But her summoning a whole ass inn, complete with like roaring bonfires and stag's heads on the wall, doesn't cause her to age in the slightest. And then this was my first Plinkett moment. Was at some point Septimus's brother Primus, the other potential heir to the throne that we know about, arrives at the inn and is then murdered there while he's in a bathtub. And when Michelle Pfeiffer leaves, the whole inn disappears. But why is Prince Primus still in the bathtub? Wouldn't the bathtub have disappeared with the rest of the inn?
Yeah.
Why isn't he just a naked corpse in the middle of the field?
Why did the prince that was killed in the bathtub bleed blue? Did you guys notice that? Was that just to get the PG rating on here?
No, I think it's a joke about there's a old saying about nobility being blue bloods.
I asked about that too, and
I think it's a little joke.
I see. Well, I am not well read enough to have known that, but anyway, I can't acknowledge this just isn't a movie for me, but it also, you know, it just isn't a movie for me, right? So I had a hard time with it. I think that they could have made it a lot shorter. I do think like the pacing is, and I'm not just saying that as a guy who thinks that every movie over 2 hours is too long, but like, one of the problems with this movie for me was that because there were three different people chasing the same thing, we got to see a lot of things three times, or we had to run into characters multiple times from multiple perspectives. And sometimes that was fun, but like, we saw Ricky Gervais multiple times. We saw Robert De Niro. We saw a little too much of Robert De Niro from time to time. So, you know, that padded out the runtime significantly. I will say one last thing. The greatest joke in this movie is Michelle Pfeiffer turning one of the goats that has actually been a goat for a long time into a human. And then he spends that actor was doing a phenomenal job of pretending to be a goat that had just come to life.
Yeah,
he's Mr. Weasley from the Harry Potter movies.
No,
that's awesome.
Yeah, indeed he is, without the fat suit, I suppose. No, Weasley, the redheaded family. Sorry, I haven't seen more than like two of the Harry Potter movies. I am a Luddite.
I'm glad I'm not the only one, because I've only seen like two or three.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I was like reading them concurrent to like when they came out, right? Like, we were just the right age for all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then by like the fifth one, I was like, he's gonna kill Voldemort. Everything's gonna be fine. Like, they're not gonna get to the seventh book and then kill Harry Potter, you know? Like, it's gonna be all right. So I just gave up.
Go say that exact sentence to Grace and watch her have a literal aneurysm.
Well, I know that like they kill him and they bring him back because like, oh, guess what, Jesus metaphor. But
I
have but, a like, funny
okay. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Good.
I have a funny Harry Potter sidebar story I could share real quick.
Yeah,
so I hadn't seen like any of them, and when I think what there's like 7-8 movies, when like Deathly Hallows Part 1 came out in theaters, which is I think part one of the final movies, I just like on a whim went and saw that with my friend because she wanted me to go with her. So there was this like older woman who was like really amped about the movie, and she was like talking to us in line and she was all excited. And then when we got in the theater, she like sat in front of us. And spoilers for Deathly Hallows Part 1, but when Dobby dies, she was like weeping profusely. And I was like, thank God that ugly motherfucker died finally. Like, but yeah, I mean, I obviously don't have the context, but anyways.
This is tangentially related to your tangent, but obviously there are similarities between Dobby and Gollum. Or Smeagol, or however that works. And we have a relative in the family who is a young child whose parents are very like anti anything that isn't or like organic food, and like they do a lot of weird health stuff in that family, and that kid is always sick with this horrible gritty cough, and we call that child Gollum to each other. It's like, oh, we're having Easter, we gotta go see Gollum this weekend.
That's funny.
It's like set like dark circles on, under the kid's eyes, and it's a concerning situation. Oh well. Okay. Did you guys think of a topic that you wanted to bring up regarding this movie?
Go ahead, Gid.
I was just gonna say we could talk about like maybe favorite lines or moments from the movie. I have a couple I could mention. But you go ahead and say what you're gonna.
I love the goat guy. I'm just answering yours because I didn't bring like a specific thing, but I thought the goat joke was really good. And you said Mark Strong was Septimus. I thought he was really cool. Like he would have been really good in like a Guy Ritchie movie as like a villain. All the shots of him like riding across the country with like his posse and just like looking evil and menacing. I was like, I wanted more of that guy.
So what fun, just quick anecdote. Primus is played by Tom from Guy Ritchie's Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. So,
oh, perfect.
There's a perfect connection.
It turns out there's like 50 British actors and most of them are in this movie. Gideon, did you know that Charlie Cox in this is Gustav in Clair Obscur?
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah. Yep. My friend told me about that. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, that's, you know, this movie was only the second most annoying thing I've seen with Charlie Cox in it all year. I'm just kidding. I like that game. I just like giving that game shit because I know it's gonna win game of the year or
crush your heart, yeah.
It's gonna crush me, and Xander's gonna hold it over my head all the rest of the year. So Charlie Cox shows up. That was pretty cool. And Michelle Pfeiffer was in here. What was with Robert De Niro being the only person without a British accent?
I don't know. He's hanging out in the clouds all days with the pirate boys. You know, they just kind of go around.
Like everybody was just so fantasy English, and you know, Ian McKellen's doing the voiceover, and then Robert De Niro shows up and he's like, "Hey."
Why does Robert De Niro not have a British accent in this movie?
I mean, I wasn't offended by that. I just thought it was funny that like De Niro shows up and he's just basically like. His outward thing is that he's just playing De Niro from every other movie, and then like once he gets behind closed doors, he's like a flamboyantly gay
drag queen
man. Dressing in women's clothing and doing the can-can in private, and yeah, that was some. Every Letterboxd review of this movie is just like, this is Robert De Niro's best performance. Like, fuck Martin Scorsese.
I mean, for me, I think his moment, I mean, his whole scene, any scene he's in when he's doing stuff like that, I think he's like stealing the show for me. I think
he's
incredible. Like, he's just, I eat that stuff up. I thought it was amazing.
Right.
Especially so, when he's like, oh, sorry, real quick. When he's like,
yeah.
Honey, you're wearing a bathrobe. Like, he's having her pick out the dress. Like, I love that. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, so we were going to say favorite moments. So, Gideon, how about you name a couple then? And Neil, I want to hear what the moments you said earlier that you pull up moments from this movie on YouTube. If you need like a little pick me up, I want to know what those are.
So, Gid, go first.
Okay. So, a couple of favorite moments. So, when they, Tristan and Yvain, they light the Babylon candle to get away from being burned alive by the witch, and they end up in the clouds, and you know, Yvain's like, what did I do? What did you do? Think of home. That was a great plan. You thought of your home and I thought of mine. Now we're halfway between the two. And Tristan is like, well, you stupid cow. Like, it's so funny the way he says it. And one thing that is like a nice blend of the fantasy and the comedy for the movie for me, and the action actually, is at the end when Septimus, he drowned, but then she's using the witch is using the voodoo to like control him and do that sword fight. I was like, this is a really funny sword fight. This is a really well choreographed sword fight and just
Yes.
really cool seeing how it plays out. I was like, holy shit, like this is really impressive on a lot of different levels right now. So I really like that. And I'm trying to think. Oh, and I did like Ricky Gervais. I'm trying to look up his quotes right now, but you guys can go ahead. Let's see.
Yeah, Neil, I want to know what your moments were.
It's going to be a lot of the same stuff Gid said. One thing I'll point out is Robert De Niro's sort of like first mate has a pretty substantial role in the HBO Band of Brothers series as an American soldier. So hearing, I don't know if he's British originally or not. So I don't know if he's doing a really thick fake accent or if that's how he sounds in real life, but it's weird to think of him being like a like Boston tough guy in Band of Brothers and then seeing him here with like Captain's busy, so should you be, blah blah blah. But yeah, De Niro doing the can-can with Mark Strong, just like who's like heard of him in universe as like this dreaded pirate, and his just like look of like utter disgust and shock as he turns the corner. He's like, and he sees Robert De Niro in like a bodice and dress, just not knowing how to process that is great. And then like Gideon said, I think that like first off, it's like kind of horrifying to see like Mark Strong's like knee get dislocated to the left by the voodoo doll. And then I think it's like a really cool way to kill him by tossing the voodoo doll into this like tub of water so that he drowns technically. That's like where the cool elements of this fantasy universe come together for me. And then, like Gideon said, like having his corpse be puppeted to fight Tristan is a lot of fun. Then once he, and I really enjoy watching like Mark Strong like be it, so we've kind of touched on this, but we haven't explained it. All of the brothers are ghosts that have to watch their brothers like try to vie for the throne. So like you have this like peanut gallery of princes with Mark Strong's ghost watching his body get like cut up and like him reacting as like he sees himself get stabbed and cut. I think it's a really fun element.
The peanut gallery.
But towards the end, Tristan is fighting Michelle Pfeiffer's witch. And it's kind of lame. She starts by throwing a vase at him, basically like using her magic to throw a giant vase at him. I thought it looked lame, but I read here that apparently that knocked Charlie Cox out. Like the stunt knocked him out. So maybe it's more effective than I want to give it credit for. But this actually brings up like my single biggest criticism of this movie is the pacing of his fight with Michelle Pfeiffer. So they devolve into like a sword fight because Michelle Pfeiffer and her sisters are about to sacrifice Claire Danes to cut her heart out and eat it and become young. But over the course of that, her two sisters have died, and she's got her knife to Charlie Cox's throat, like she's won. And then she looks around at like the destruction of her home, at her sister's corpses, and she like lets him go. Like, all everything that this was for is gone now. Youth, beauty, what does it matter? My sisters are dead. And she like lets them start to leave, and then she starts to cackle madly, and then like starts to make the windows of her house shatter inwards to like cut them, but it doesn't actually do anything. And then she's like advancing on them menacingly again, and Claire Danes uses her star power to kill her, which is a fine element in itself. But I was like, what changed in the last 20 seconds where you were going to let them go? You then used your limited magic to do something that had no effect, and now you're dead. Like, There's been this element throughout the movie where they want Claire Danes to be happy and like feeling loved because that makes her glow and that makes her heart more powerful. So like eating it has a greater effect. And I thought like, oh, she's gonna let them like think that she's letting them go so that, Claire Danes will get happy and then she'll start. But no, it's just why did she change her opinion in the last 20 seconds? There's no justification. It's literally just to like put space between her and Claire Danes so Claire Danes can use her star power explosion. So like it stumbles at the finish line for me.
Well, in that case, I'll say, Gideon, any I'm kind of at the speak now, forever hold your peace part of the podcast for me personally. You guys have any other burning subjects you want to bring up before we wrap it up and get scores?
I think I'm good to go.
Yeah, I think I'm good too.
Okay, in that case, I'll go ahead and I'll say I'm gonna give it a I'm not gonna give it a one. I'm gonna give it a two, just because it's not like what like I feel like to be a one, you gotta be like kind of like you almost have to be trying. It has to be like offensively bad, or it has to be like disappointing. And I had no expectation of this movie going in, but I think if it was shorter, I probably would have knocked it up into a three. But it was like not a subject that was particularly interesting to me, and then it was like 2 hours and 10 minutes or something like that. And by the end of it, I was like, okay, let's get the show on the road, guys. Also, no movie where Robert De Niro is wearing a tutu can be above a two in my ranking system. I'm sorry, it's just like
Not yet.
They did my boy so dirty. I feel like next time it's my turn, I'm bringing Taxi Driver or something. Maybe we should do De Niro December. But yeah, we'll definitely watch it in the future. It kind of seemed like Grace has a lot of love for this movie because she's a lot more joyful and pure-hearted than I am and can enjoy things. But I think a certain element of it is that, like, she was a teenager when she saw it, so had a lot of romantic feeling. It was helping her sort through a lot of, romantic teenage woman feelings that that I do not understand. So maybe that has a bit of it too. I did like the cameos. Henry Cavill's awesome. Ricky Gervais is awesome. Seeing Peter O'Toole was cool. But yeah, a movie with some pretty major problems for me, but that's okay. How about you get, and then we'll go to Neil, and Neil can send us out.
Yeah. So for me, I mean, I totally get where you're coming from, Sam, because for a while I thought this movie really wasn't for me either, and I was kind of just like down on it the past couple times I'd watched it. But I also, like I mentioned, I felt like I didn't give it like my full attention, or like, maybe I was kind of with the wrong people while I was watching it in previous times, stuff like that. But this time, yeah, I really grew to appreciate it. And while I don't like love it as much as like Alyssa or like Grace probably, but I really enjoy it. I would give it like a light four. I had a lot more fun with it, and I could see myself, enjoying it more in the future too. And like I mentioned, the biggest thing for me is like just the sense of like whimsy and fantasy of this flavor that I feel like is almost throughout the kind of like mid 2000s, that it I don't know, maybe it's nostalgia, I don't know what it is, but I don't feel like we get this kind of a movie anymore in this kind of fantasy angle and lens. But yeah, I have more appreciation for it. I had a lot of fun revisiting it.
What about you, Neil?
I think I'm gonna give this a three. And this is strong three. I think we mentioned some of the issues with this, like is it high cinema for Sam? No. Is it like the greatest fantasy movie ever made? No, but it's just a lot of fun. Again, like it's definitely a I'm just gonna turn my brain off and enjoy myself kind of thing. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I really enjoyed revisiting it. I enjoyed, you know, having my little Plinkett moments as I watched it. And, you know, I don't think we mentioned it. It's directed by Matthew Vaughn, who's done like the Kingsman movies and a couple of the newer X-Men movies. And he only seems to do like a movie every like 3 years. Like, so I think he's very intentional with what he makes. And ultimately, you know, I think he, you know, he definitely has like a style that he likes to project. And I think it I think this is one of his earliest films, and it shines through here. I think he's just, you know, kind of, you know, he's got a vision for what he wants to show, and I think he does a good job of doing it. And is it absolute cinema? No, but is it fun and, you know, something to nice to sit with your girlfriend and watch? Yeah, that's.
You know what? You were right in that I was watching it really early this morning because I ended up not having to go into the office for reasons and needed to knock it out. And so I watched probably the first half alone and Grace was still sleeping. And then like when she came out, she was like, oh shit, is this Stardust? And then she watched the rest of it with me. I enjoyed it a lot more after Grace hopped in and we were just kind of like, I don't want to say talking over it, but you know, just like hanging out and watching it. And I wasn't like in, I wasn't doing the Don Draper watching a movie alone pose anymore and looking
smoking
for
smoking angrily.
Yeah, smoking angrily. Yeah, exactly. So,
saying to the movie in your head, prove it.
this is cinema. So yeah, I think you guys are kind of right on that. It's a movie better watched with somebody that sparks joy to. Borrow a Marie Kondoism. So whose turn is it for next week?
I think it's yours, dude.
Okay, I'm going to have to think if I really want to follow up and try to get De Niro December off the ground.
I will say I do like the theme month. I think it's a fun like mix.
Yeah, but I also don't want to like limit us. And
Right.
I'm trying to think of... Well, I also don't want to do like... I don't want to do like Taxi Driver, which is like literally one of the greatest movies of all time, and like have a five on my like have just like win a bunch of fives because I picked what everybody thinks is the best movie of the 70s. So, have you guys actually seen Taxi Driver?
I own it. I haven't seen it yet.
I have not.
Neil, okay, then I'm going to say let's do it because you guys haven't seen it and it's so fucking awesome. But maybe I'll say it's exempt from the thing where we figure out who picked the best movies because I feel like it would be unfair for that. And then in the next couple of weeks, we also have to consider when did we do our wrap-up last year? Did we do it in December or did we do it in January?
Early January,
okay. Yeah, so I would assume we'll... next week will be Taxi Driver. We'll have one more episode after that. And then the next 2 weeks will be Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, respectively. So we'll be off those 2 weeks. And then we'll come back and we'll do our year wrap up. And by my count, that'll put us at 33 episodes for the year, for the season, which is pretty damn good. Considering that, you know, things we all supposedly have lives and other things to be doing. So. You know, pretty good job. So let's do a Taxi Driver for next week. That's, you know, it's, as I recall, it's pretty short and you guys are in for a treat. It's one of my all-time favorites. And, you know, maybe we'll keep going with De Niro December after that, or maybe Gid, you'll pick something else. And it'll be the holidays and then it'll be a wrap-up time and we can do James Hong January or John Woo January or whatever. John Travolta January. Start off the year with Battlefield Earth. Or John Waters January. I think Neil said something about that.
Yeah.
Like we can't just give away months. Like eventually we're gonna run out of Nick Cage movies for November. So
what Neil, you underestimate how many Nick Cage movies wouldn't it be funny if, because Alex Brinson keeps messaging me like, hey man, I should come back on the podcast sometime, and I always say yeah, and he says, oh, just let me know what you're doing. Wouldn't it be funny if the first episode we got him back for was Pink Flamingos? Mm-hmm. I'll think about it. I'll pitch him on it. Okay. I'll see you guys next week.
See ya.
Have a good one, boys.
Peace, guys.